coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman Report. It's Monday, March 11, 2024. I know you don't like it when I do this, but Eric the Tech, did you have a good weekend?
I did. A little under the weather, but I'm good.
I know that. Yeah, a little bit under the weather, but you know what? It's he's looking good. He just sounds a little bit off, but walking around like a zombie. Were you bitten by a zombie? No, that's all right. You have to answer. All right. He's got to actually reach over a couple of boxes to get to the mic, which we got to fix that for you so you can more readily respond as opposed to having to do gymnastics over there in your production spaceship. Anyway, have a great show lined up for you today, folks. A lot of things to get into, really laying things out. But before laying how everything is playing out, laying it up. But before I do, two things. Folks, if you haven't done this already, make sure you join me in Wausau, Wisconsin. You might say, what? That's right. Wausau, Wisconsin. And that is going to be on April 12th and 13th. Wisconsin Christian News. Hey, Coach Dave Dobbenmeyer, Mike Spaulding, many others. I mean, I'm going to tell you what. A class, if you take me out of that lineup, a class lineup. I'll pull up the end. But, folks, I'm going to be bringing actual crime scene evidence. I'm signing out, never before seen, and probably will never again be seen in person. And that's from a couple of satanic ritual abuse cases. I can guarantee you, when you look at this stuff, you're going to be, whoa. Because I certainly, that was my reaction. And this may, in fact, be the last conference I do. So, and I say that just because of the way things are going. I don't know. But I would urge everyone to go to WisconsinChristianNews.com. And through Coach Dave Dobbenmeyer's website, Coach Dave Live, that's where you purchase the tickets. I mean, I think they're all of $69. It's and by the way, am I right? Yeah, okay. So, and by the way this conference is laid out, this will not tire you out. Okay, it's 9 to 5 on Friday. I'm sorry. I can't read that. 6 to 9 p.m. Friday, and then 9 to 5 on Saturday. Just the way the glare was hitting that part of the preview monitor. Anyway, the theme, of course, we won't back down, folks. I'm telling you, this is going to be a great... I'd love to meet you. I really would. So please, mark your calendars, April 12th and 13th, 2024. And the theme, of course, we won't back down. Get your tickets right away. It's my understanding the seating is limited, so you want to do it soon. Like, after the show. All right, the second thing, I want to just mention this. Folks, if you haven't heard about this, Magic Dicol, which is Nanosoma. This is a spray. There's a topical gel and a cream as well. I have never used... there's so many things out there where you can invest, spend, and even sometimes waste your money. This is not one of them. This is... And this is a product. I have to be careful what I say. But this tells your body what to fix, and your body fixes it. In my mind, okay, in my limited capacity mentally, that's kind of what I'm thinking. The best way I could describe it. it kind of triages, you know, whatever might be wrong with you, and then tells your cells, your body, hey, fix that. I have spoken to people. Let me tell you something. I've spoken to people, and myself included. You talk about neuropathy, depending on what the cause might be. It doesn't matter really what the cause is, I don't think. But diabetic neuropathy, I'm telling you what, in my case, I had it so bad, there were times that tears came out of my eyes. Anyone who was, if you've had it, anyone who's had it, yeah, show of hands, I see a lot of people out there. But I'll tell you what, a few weeks of this, and I go through about a bottle a week, a few weeks of this, I started noticing, wait a second, I don't have any neuropathy. I mean, it's not lessened, it's absent. My blood sugar, seriously, my blood sugar levels, absolutely incredible. Folks, go to iwantmyhealthback/Hagman, or simply go to HagmanPI.com, click on the link above. But do me a favor, watch the videos first. Watch them all the way through. Watch the videos. Yeah, I know, but watch the videos. Or not. I'd like you to. There it is, right on the top of your screen. Well, not on the top. It's in the middle of your screen. Eric the Tech is kind of messing with it right there. You can see. There it is, right there. They're the products. And by the way, the topical gel, I cut myself when I was out of town. ER kind of stuff, almost, that gel. I cannot believe how well that healed the ugly cut I had on my hand. It's gone. You can't even see it. It's gone. All right. With me is John Moore from, well, he is the Liberty Man, thelibertyman.com. Before I get to John, I want to play this. This will outline or kind of give you an idea of, in my mind, the time John and I are going to spend. This kind of sets the stage for today's show. This is video one on the show prep. All you have to do is go to HagmanPI.com, click on the episode title to find The Liberty Man, by the way, his link to his website, but also to find this and any other source article link that we use in today's show. But this is Dan Bongino specifically addressing something that I think all of us need to come to grips with. Oh, don't worry, it's clean, and it's well, here, watch it for yourself. This is a video, we're cut one from the show prep.
Karen, I've got a complaint. I know the campaign wants to win over Nikki Haley's voters, but I don't think you do that with name calling. For example, I take issue with Trump's new nickname for California governor, calling him New Scum. I don't think that's a good idea. I object to that kind of language. How about you?
Well, I think that what Governor Gavin Newsom has done to the great state, once great state of California, is terrible. You see real scum, real homeless people all over the streets.
Excuse me, are you okay? Are you saying it's okay to bring that kind of language to a presidential campaign? New scum? That's okay?
I think the real problem here, Stu, is the policies of the deranged Democrats from Gavin Newsom to Joe Biden.
I think your campaign has a problem with language like that. You don't agree with me, but I think your campaign has a problem with language like that.
Well, I don't think voters respectfully agree with you either, Stu, if you look at the resounding wins that President Trump has received across the board.
You think you're going to win over Haley voters with language like that, do you? You win over moderates and women with language like that? Really?
Folks, there's an answer for this, and I'm not telling anyone how to do their job. She is super talented. This is not in any way directed at Carolyn, who I know pretty well. She's fantastic. Had her on my radio show. I think she ran for Congress. She did a pretty good job, too. the answer to this question is fairly obvious. When someone asks you, are you okay with language? Like, yeah, actually, we're going to be using more of it. These are communists weaponizing our government, destroying people, inflating away our economy, the dramatic price of food. You have families on the verge of starvation. Yeah, we're going to use every tool in the toolbox, including mockery, to make sure everybody understands the scum these people are. Any other questions? Cutesy time is over. It is over. You want to play cute? This is, I'm just going to be fairly candid with you. This is not the show for you. Because this is never going to be that show.
Nor is this. And that sets the stage to bring John Moore on. To me, cutesy time is over. We're not going to play that game. I'm not going to be forced or compelled to engage in your fantasy of trans whatever. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to. I don't care. You are our enemy. Is this communist Leviathan. And we have been infiltrated. We've been, our leaders have been compromised, and we have to fight. And we have to fight like our lives depend on it, because they do. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Thanks for joining me today. It's good to see you. You're looking fabulous. Folks, hit the link to John's show will be at hagmanpi.com, as it always is. And in the episode. But John, how are you today, sir?
I'm wonderful, Doug. Good to be with you. And I notice you do have a suntan.
Yeah,
I do. You look great.
I do.
You look great. You do look great.
I feel good. Doggone it. I look good. What was that? What was that character from Saturday Night Live? Anyway, folks, you know what I'm talking about. Some of you, anyway. But well, thanks. You do too. You look great as well. So, John, do you agree? I mean, I think it's time that we fight with everything that we have, because our country's at stake, our lives are at stake, our futures are at stake. What are your thoughts, my friend?
Well, I'm not focused so much on the language that President Trump uses, which it does alienate a few people, but that's kind of a side issue, I believe. President Trump and others, including myself, and I believe you, Doug, are also advocating that we have a free and fair election, which involves paper ballots with a carbon copy counted at the precinct level, one-day voting, no mail-in ballots, no ballot harvesting. Of course, there will be ballot harvesting this coming election because it's legal in certain jurisdictions. And I'm proud to say that Republicans are taking advantage of every legal way to win this election, including ballot harvesting. If it's legal, go ahead and do it. Absolutely. It needs to be abolished. But if it's legal in a particular jurisdiction, it needs to be taken advantage by the Republicans as well as Democrats. So many elections recently have been held out as the most important election ever. In the case of this 2024 election, the first Tuesday in November, I believe it's not inaccurate at all. We call this the most important election we've ever had. We're certainly at a crisis point with, we don't know how many illegal aliens. The official numbers appear to be hovering around 10 to 11 million. Unofficially, I'm hearing and seeing twice, sometimes three times that many. That's an unacceptable number of people. I can easily see President Trump making use of school buses, public buses, whatever it takes to get these people out of the country, with the largest deportation effort ever undertaken in our country. It needs to happen, Doug. It's simply unacceptable to have this many illegal alien criminals in our country. They need to be gone. They need to go back to where they came from. And if their home country won't accept them, drop them off in Mexico. Make sure they can't get back in, Doug.
No, I totally agree with you. And especially on the tactics, and this is something that I thought about. Look, I'm a believer. One vote, ID, paper ballots, people counting them. Okay, that's same as you. I believe in that. But in many jurisdictions, we don't have that. So therefore, in my view, and I think this mirrors what you just said, we play by their rules, and in some cases, they're not playing by the rules, so why should we? We have to fight on a level. We have to level the playing field, I guess, and fight as they do. If you can vote early, vote early. If you can, I mean, do whatever you have to do to win, because you're absolutely correct. I believe, and we're not that far apart in age. You're probably, what, 50, 60 years older than I am?
At least.
Yeah. No, the way I look at it is this is the most important election in our lifetime. And I'm seeing things heating up. Are you seeing the rhetoric, the neighbor against neighbor, especially on social media? Are you seeing that heat up at all?
I'm aware that it's there. I don't particularly see it so much myself. But I'll tell you, Doug, when I go to the local coffee shop, I interact with people that are high school dropouts, others that have advanced degrees from various universities. And there's an undertone of people just fed up. They've had it with the U.S. government, the healthcare system, the politics. They almost without exception, they see Donald Trump as part of the solution, not the entire solution, obviously, but coupled with electing patriotic conservative Christians at every level, the local school board, city council, mayors, sheriffs, and so forth. Donald Trump by himself can't possibly do this. Of course not. We need a surge of conservative Christian patriots across the country to be elected to every office we can imagine. We need in all 50 states, we need to do away with mail-in ballots. Third world countries have voter ID. Doug, it's inherently racist for Democrats to say it affects black people who don't have government-issued photo ID. Doug, you cannot function in this society without a government-issued photo ID. You simply can't, including the entire black community. That's a fiction, and it's inherently racist to make that statement on the face of it, isn't it, Doug?
Oh, yeah, it sure is. And folks, don't underestimate your ability to change things. I have already committed myself, signed up, and am going to be a poll watcher / challenger. Now, that second part is new, but here's the thing: when I go there, and I'm able to supervise what takes place, no one's going to tell me where to stand. Of course, I'm going to be respectful, but no one's going to tell me I can't. You know, I can't see. No one's going to tell me I can't do my job. Okay, obviously, right. I'm going to respect the voter. I'm going to respect their privacy. But when it comes to, you know, when it comes time to count the ballots or do whatever, I'm going to make sure I'm there. No one's going to put a pizza box in front of me. No one is going to make me sit in a corner. And if they do, and I already have a list of attorneys that they had given out to the whoever's in charge of this election. So I intend to attempt to make a difference here in my county. So everyone can do that, and I think everyone should who cares and who can do that. Go ahead, sir.
Well, Doug, in 1994, I was doing executive protection for the woman who was in charge of the Missouri anti-gambling campaign. And election day, the first Tuesday, November 1994, she was a registered poll watcher in a city of St. Louis precinct where, for decades, more ballots came out than voters came in the door. It was no secret at all. So we're there doing this thing, watching the polls. I was watching her to make sure she's safe. When the alderman of that precinct came in, who happened to be the father of the mayor of St. Louis at the time, and this is a black, 99% black precinct. He asked these two women who they were. They identified themselves, showed their credentials, and he demanded they leave. Well, they refused. And so he said, I'll call the police. The poll watchers said, I think you should call the police. So the two uniformed officers show up. They listen to the alderman. They talk to the two poll watchers, and they told the alderman to take a hike. And we spent the rest of the day at that poll watching what was going on and making notes and counting the voters as they came in the door, which is critical. You can't have more ballots go out the door than you have voters come in the door. That's absolutely critical, Doug. And if you add up the total Biden vote count from 2020 and the total Trump count, voter count from 2020, you have more voters than you have registered voters in the United States. That's not possible, Doug. It simply isn't.
No. But that's
fraud on the face of it. Even if you're not choosing who was defrauded, that's automatically fraud on the face of it when you have more ballots than you have voters, Doug.
No, you're 100% right. And to think otherwise, I have no doubt in my mind that 2020, obviously, folks, that was a stolen election. There's no way in hell Biden got 81 million votes. That guy couldn't get, half a dozen people in 6-foot circles. Okay. So it was a stolen election in 2020. What gets me, though, John, is the right, the Republicans in this case. In 2022, they believed, hey, we can win just on the numbers. And they took a beating again. But they played the same game as they did in 2020.
You can't be polite.
No.
You can't be polite. You have to be tough.
Exactly.
You have to play the same game that they're playing. We have no choice, Doug. We really have no choice. And we keep hearing over and over again that these 10 million plus illegal aliens are going to be voting. Well, they'll be registered to vote. They won't necessarily go to the polls, but the Democrats will vote on their behalf, even if they never show up at the polls, won't they, Doug?
Exactly. And I have a problem. See, man, I got a big problem with all of this. Okay. There are hundreds of NGOs out there being paid by the United States. I'm going to be involved in a webinar with Pastor Paul Begley, and my topic is about the invasion of the U.S. and really the global invasion of the West, but how the apocalyptic nature of all this. But to your point, okay, the damage, they're being used as human ammunition, these many of these people, at least the ones with who are truly attempting to seek a better life. I don't know, maybe all 12, 14 of them. But they're being used as human ammunition. And, of course, they're being used by the left in ways that I don't even think we can imagine, but as assets for the votes. Go ahead.
Well Doug, we've seen multiple reports from the Darien Gap, which are good and necessary and they need to continue. On one hand, you and I are both broadcast journalists, and I would like to see several journalists go to places like Guatemala and Venezuela, in the Middle East and in Africa. We have refugees coming here from Africa. Go to these African countries and find out and document what's being broadcast in radio reports, TV reports, newspaper reports, getting these people, recruiting these people. What propaganda is being used to recruit people to come from 8 and 10 time zones away to the United States? I'd really like to see that and find out, more importantly, who's paying for it? Who's paying for the TV ads in Guatemala, the radio ads in Guatemala, the newspaper ads in Guatemala to get these people to leave their homes, leave their families, and come to the United States? What promises are being made? What support's being given to them?
You know what's sad? I have kind of an answer for you on this. And folks, listen to me carefully. This invasion, at least to the United States, to answer your question, first of all, it's being funded primarily by or through, again, different tactics here, by the and through the United Nations. It's non-governmental partners and regimes that are hostile to the United States. Now, under Biden, funding from us, you and I, U.S. taxpayers, to the UN jumped to more than $1 billion in 2023. Mass migration has has been weaponized to overwhelm and destabilize the U.S. and ultimately break it apart. Now, last year, a record 500,000 illegals traveled through the Darien Gap, documents show. The United Nations and related NGOs, which receive millions of taxpayer dollars, have made mass migration easier by facilitating and augmenting this migrant movement with food, shelter, and water, all of which is being paid for, most of which is being paid for by NGOs, funded in part by the United States via the UN, and in some cases, charities, so-called charity groups like the Soros Open Society Foundation and its different tentacles. But the other part of what you said, it's in Spanish. I could tell you this, when Biden took over and his first 100 days in office, he got rid of 94 restrictions that President Trump imposed, and also sent out the clarion call titled it's the invitation in Spanish. I can't pronounce Spanish. And all of the ads in Spanish, Latin, and some in South America are, hey, to seek a better life, come to America. The doors are open. Kind of like Biden, Motel 6, we'll leave the light on for you. We're not going to harass you. You're not going to get stopped. But that, I'm going to shut up after this. I spoke to Michael Yon I've been speaking with him communicating with him quite frequently, and Ann Vandersteel. And they're saying they were down in Panama, they were down in Latin America, parts of South America. Michael's been everywhere. And they're saying that the promises made by Mayorkas and by Biden and Mayorkas, saying we're not going to stop you, just come on in and you'll have a chance at a better life. That's kind of what's being said that I can verify. There may be other things. I don't know. I don't know about Europe or Western Europe. I don't know what's going on there. But this is a global thing. Go ahead, sir.
Well, it is. Talk about Venezuela for a bit. The prisoners and the insane asylums. If you think about it, Doug, providing food, shelter, clothing, medical supply for criminals and the mentally insane is expensive. Of course it is. So what I'm reading is that Venezuela is clearing out the prisons, which includes rapists, murderers, armed robbers, the insane asylums where people obviously have severe mental health issues, and they're loading them up and shipping them to the United States, which accomplishes two things. It provides them with a financial advantage that they didn't have before, saving all that tens of millions of dollars, and they're helping to wreck the United States, which is another goal. Venezuela is a communist country, and one of their goals, of course, is to destroy the United States. So it's a win-win situation for Venezuela to clear out the prisons and the insane asylums, shipping these men and women to the United States. It's the dynamite with the fuse already lit, Doug, is what it is. We have men who are obviously part of the People's Liberation Army coming here. We have the insane asylum people from Venezuela, the criminals from Venezuela. They're coming here, sometimes walking across the border in Texas. Other times we're now finding being flown to probably regional airports. These regional airports, Doug, once it's dark, there's almost nobody there. A few maintenance people. There's no customs people. Hardly anything at all. Somebody in the tower to make sure planes can land and take off safely. But these regional airports are virtually empty at night. And I'm pretty sure that's where they're bringing them into, Doug. I've had documentation and firsthand witness accounts of that going back 8 and 10 years.
43 airports, 320,000 illegals in this silent, these silent flights in the middle of the night. And I believe you are correct. I think they are the regional airports that you speak of that are the recipients of these illegals who are then bused to wherever. So I think you're 100% on the
Reports I got going back, like I say, 6 or 8 years ago, one, I had a reporter down in Springfield, Missouri, which has a regional airport. Springfield is about 250,000 people. Branson, Missouri is just south of there, about a half-hour drive. And these planes would come in late at night. They would land. There's no customs people, no officials, no police. They offload the aircraft. And at the time, we found out they were using UPS cargo airplanes that have been reconfigured by putting seats in them. Apparently, they're set up so they can install or remove seats in a matter of a few hours. So they're deplaning and getting on vans and getting on Interstate 44s right there and leaving for places unknown. So there's nothing new about this. What's new about it is it's being reported to the public. But I've been reporting it for 6 or 8 years, Doug.
You've been on top of things. And folks, John Moore, thelibertyman.com, if you haven't done so already, bookmark his website, but also listen to his show because he has some tremendous guests on, the deep dives into subjects that you're interested in. If you're listening to the show, and I can't say enough good about what I hear. I mean, I have a show on in the background. I use some of it for show prep, and but that's John Moore. And plus, you class this up quite a bit, this operation up quite a bit. But yeah, I don't think you can be more correct than you are right now.
Well, thank you, Doug. It's, you know, it's my passion. When I was 18 years old, I had to fill out when I was my freshman year in college what my goal was, my career goal, and that was to be a journalist. Wow. At the time, there was no such thing as talk radio in the modern sense of the word, but here I am now, half a century later, a broadcast journalist, and I love it. I'd much rather be doing this than investigating homicides, which you and I have done many times. As the old saying goes,
to count, right?
Well, I could sit down and count them, but unlike books, movies, and TV shows, a defense investigator takes about a year from start to finish on the average. And if you're doing it right, and of course that's what I always did, it takes over your life. It really does. A homicide investigation takes over your life. And when it's trial time, the world stops.
Oh yeah.
And that 3 days or 4 days, unlike radio and TV, they don't go on for weeks and weeks. Typical murder trial is 3 days, sometimes four, very rarely. But the world stops when that trial is taking place. Nothing else exists. Nothing else matters. And I'd much rather be a broadcast journalist, quite frankly. Anyway, Jug, go ahead.
Let me stop you right there because you mentioned homicides, and that's my passion. Okay, now, I've taken numerous forensic courses, and there is such a thing as being certified in cold case homicide investigations and such. So, but I want to ask you a question because this is not getting enough play. We know that Mitch McConnell, and I don't know how much you know about this.
You're talking about sister-in-law?
Yeah. Now he resigned his position, his leadership position.
Right.
But his sister-in-law, Angela Chow, she died in Johnson City, Texas, after her car became submerged in a pond. And this was, I think, late last month. Okay, so the whole thing stunk to high. When I heard it, the whole thing stunk to high heaven. All right, supposedly it was kind of an accidental death. Anyway, it became an equivocal death investigation. Now they're saying, wait a second, could very well be a homicide we're dealing with. These are the authorities. Now, Chow is the sister of Elaine Chow, who was the transportation secretary, a former cabinet member, Elaine Chow, and, of course, sister-in-law of Mitch McConnell. So what are your thoughts on this, if you have any?
Well, I don't have access to the police report, but my first two questions are the following two. First of all, how drunk was she? And second of all, was he Tesla, a self-driving automobile?
The second part is, I'm not sure if it was a self-driving, but it was a Tesla. So does that count?
Well, another aspect of it being a Tesla, once it's underwater, can you open the windows? All electric vehicle, I want nothing to do with all electric vehicles myself. But
a Tesla Model X SUV.
Right. Well, I don't know what that means. But
I don't either.
The first responders were rightfully scared to death about getting in the water with this damn thing for fear of being electrocuted. That's a well-founded, very real fear. This thing's got enough battery power to electrocute a man in a heartbeat. No pun intended. So, but it's, going to a pond, if you're an adult, and if you can't, probably you could stand on the roof of the damn thing and not drown. I don't know how deep the pond was.
And that's exactly what the first two on the scene did. One was on top of the car. They could not get in to the vehicle for whatever reason. Breaking the glass, if you have the right tool, it's not that big of a deal.
The side glass is easy. The windshield's tough.
Yeah.
But the side glass turns into cubes. So you hit it with a hammer, any object like that, a hammer, a big rock, would turn all that glass into cubes in a heartbeat.
Well, the story, and by the way, this did happen on February 10th, shortly, right around midnight. I do have the report. The report is, all it is what we used to call triptychs. It's just a, trip records. It's just time dispatch, time of the call, time dispatch, time arrival. Very little information, but nonetheless. So I've got a copy of that. But the fact is, the terrain was very difficult, and it took 24 minutes to get to the submerged vehicle after the call. 24 minutes.
Well,
that's a long time.
The record reflects this woman being in the car, in the water, on the telephone. Now, why in the hell didn't she open the window? Well, we don't know. She attempted to open the window and couldn't, or she was so distraught that she didn't think to do that. She didn't know how to do it. There's a lot of unknowns here, Arthur, Doug.
Oh, man. Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't know about you, but I always, and folks, I'd recommend this. I carry a flashlight with a in my vehicle, and on the side is got one of those. You can knock out the window if you have to, and it also has something you can cut the seatbelt.
Right.
So, folks, regardless, but there's something that smells to high heaven about this. In addition, obviously, to the electric vehicle aspect of things, but. Yeah, I kind of wanted to get your take on it.
Well, another aspect of this, the Tesla automobile did not gently roll over the embankment. Apparently, it's going fast enough to put it out some distance from the bank of the pond.
Yes,
that was mentioned also. So, if she was gently turning around, typically when people turn around, they're going 2 or 3 miles an hour, which, if you go over an embankment of a pond going 2 miles an hour, you're going to roll down the embankment and stop pretty much. But this vehicle was way out. Now, how far is way out? 20 feet, 30 feet? But it sounds like it was much farther out than a woman gently turning a vehicle around in the dark. Well, she was in the dark, right?
Correct. Well, it was dark outside given the time of night. But
right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So,
It's interesting what you said, too, because CNN reported the tow truck driver who couldn't get the winch to the vehicle, the end of the winch to the vehicle, expressed a electrocution hazard.
That's a real concern.
Yeah.
It's not so flight of fantasy to be concerned that an electric vehicle in the water is going to kill you. That's a very real concern based on real science and real evidence, Doug.
Well, this is something that I'm going to follow. I when you mentioned homicides, I thought of that, and I'm going to be following this and seeing what I can come up with. But anytime the communist Chinese, let me rephrase that. Anytime you've got someone who is a native born from China, and you have the communist Chinese presence in this country, and you have politics involved. I just think that it warrants really close investigation. That's just my view on it. But okay.
I hope the local sheriff does a thorough investigation, given the high profile of the woman, Texas Rangers or some similar state authority should do a thorough investigation of this and hopefully come to the right conclusion of what really happened there.
All murder victims deserve justice and deserve their stories to be told. And I truly believe that in my experience, I'm sure you too, bodies tell their own stories as to what happened. And anyway, hopefully that'll be the case, and we can get some information. I feel very bad for her family and for her. Very, very.
It's a tragedy, no doubt.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah,
she didn't deserve that, not at all.
So, okay. I want to ask you about this too. This is page one in the show notes. Obviously, President Trump had a victory with respect to the 9-0 Supreme Court ruling last week.
Right.
Okay. Now, this, folks, we don't jump on headlines right away. I don't do that because, to me, I think a lot of, we need the time to take our time to take a look at what. I don't want to be first. I want to be correct. Okay, so that said, there was a lot of back slapping and high fiving over that, but I do believe that there are other things in the offing that present some not so good scenarios for President Trump, because they're bound and determined, the left, the communist left in this country, to keep him off the ballot. John, did you see this? Jonathan Turley came out with a piece talking about a nightmare scenario, how a Trump trial could now run up to or through the 2024 election. Have you seen this at all? Have you read
this? I haven't seen that column, but I'm aware that's certainly a possibility. Absolutely it is.
So, okay. And folks, you can read this at your leisure. Essentially, what is being said here, at least in my, or at least how the column reads, this trial will not yield to the election cycle. And those are the words of Tanya Chutkan last year. That's the judge who made it clear that she's not going to consider that Donald Trump will likely be the candidate or the nominee in setting the schedule for his trial. So, and Jack Smith, the same thing, declared that he will not consider himself bound by the Justice Department's longstanding policy of not bringing charges or holding trials of candidates close to an election. So there's that immunity question lingering out there as well. Now, I said all of that to ask you if you have any thoughts on the immunity question. And also, if you have any thoughts about what a trial would do during this.
Well, let's address, first of all, President Trump, as far as the trial issue, he can do workarounds. All these, as you and most of our audience may know, most of these court matters are set 30 days in advance. So that gives him time to do workarounds for rallies and appearances. I don't think that's too much concern. As to immunity, that's massive, because if they take away President Trump's right to immunity, they've also taken away that right from every previous and future president, which is very dangerous for a number of reasons. Men and women at that level are not going to expose themselves, their family, everything about them to that kind of exposure by losing the right of immunity. They simply won't. They won't run for president. We have several previous presidents who, if they lost their right to immunity, could easily be brought up on charges. Like, for example, President Clinton and what happened in Benghazi is a great example. That becomes very real very quickly, because there's any number of men and women who would love to see, once again, going back to President Clinton, President Clinton brought up on charges for what appears to be the intentional death of the ambassador in Gaza. I hope I didn't get that wrong. I mean, but who was it, President? Was it Obama?
It was Obama with Clinton as Secretary of State.
And Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State.
Right.
So let's get it straight, John. So Obama could easily be brought up on charges for what happened in Benghazi. Hillary Clinton, the same thing. These other cabinet-level people also enjoy a pretty similar immunity for acts they do when they're in those positions. They're always doing things that put them at risk. That's just the nature of those kind of jobs, Doug. And it's dangerous territory, and the Supreme Court should not take away presidential immunity at all. It would put at risk all these previous presidents, all future presidents, as well as President Trump. And hopefully they won't do that, Doug.
Well, yeah. I mean, you would essentially, by removing immunity, you would decapitate the executive branch and essentially destroy our republic. And it almost seems to me that that's what the left wants to do. I mean, that's kind of my thinking about this in any way they can. And certainly Smith, who I don't believe is should even be in that position, and Chutkan, who openly stated that she wanted, she believes he's President Trump is guilty and should be prosecuted and imprisoned. This is who is trying the case of the cases now. And by the way, folks, we have, according to the article, there are roughly 770,000 pending cases in about 100 district courts around the country. So the backlog, okay, when you look at the backlog, and also even defendants who plead guilty in the case, their case usually takes about 10 months. So this would be on a, not just a rocket docket, but a super duper rocket docket in order to get this even to trial. So at any rate, by the way, that Jack Smith, boy, I'll tell you what a guy he is. He offered no reason other than he wants voters to consider the outcome of the trial. It's a rare acknowledgement of a desire for a trial to become a factor in an election, yet he's doing it. So here we are. Your take on it is important given that your history in the courtroom and beyond. So there it is. Okay. I get it, I guess.
Absolutely.
I mean, this whole thing is politics, but the immunity thing I think is a huge deal. And for the Supreme Court not to grant presidents immunity, I mean, we're not talking about a president who would, sacrifice kill a person on the steps of the White House. We're talking about executive level decisions that could go sideways, right? I mean, we're talking common sense stuff here. Okay, so what's the bottom line in your mind? Can you imagine the Supreme Court not giving the president immunity? That
position? I can't, Doug. And I believe the same thought process will go in to this as I did deciding that President Trump has to be on all the ballots. He can't be taken off the ballots. Now, usually when conservatives are looking at the Supreme Court, we look at the flaming liberals that are on there, the way that Justice Roberts votes on one hand. On the other, there's another level of thought among these nine men and women, thoughts about their place in history, thoughts about the future of the republic. And obviously, precedent, most of our legal system is based on precedents. And there's some things they simply can't go against. And we saw that with that 9-0 vote the other day. This matter of immunity.
Were you surprised by that 9-0?
Yes and no. I've worked with people at that level. We not U.S. Supreme Court, but we had a Missouri Supreme Court justice I knew since he was in law school, Rick Teitelman, and they all have their own thoughts and beliefs and so forth, but some lines can't be crossed. And when it comes, they're all at that level. All men and women are very aware of their place in history. And the older they get, the more mature they get, the closer they get to their retirement, the more aware that they become their place in history and how it will affect the republic and their oath of office and so forth. And I think all those things were factors in that 9-0 vote, Doug.
Okay. All right.
And I believe it will happen again once this immunity matter comes up. But we have well more than 200 years of presidential immunity being a fact of life that allows these presidents to do what they need to do in whatever matter it might be. And it would cripple, and no matter if the president is extreme right-wing or extreme left-wing, it would cripple these presidents from doing what they feel needs to be done at the moment in time, making them resistant and refusing to do the right thing at the right time because of their fear of being prosecuted if they lose immunity. So I think the Supreme Court will continue that tradition, which needs tradition, needs to continue to keep these presidents able to do their duty.
Well, no, I totally agree with you on that. And I think, boy, that, man, is that, wow, would that be a wrong-headed move? Yeah, for sure. One more thing I wanted to get your take on, and then wherever you want to go. But this, I saw this poll. Now, I'm not a big believer in polls, but this was a Rasmussen report. And the National Pulse, Raheem Kassam, published this. And here's the headline. 57% of Democrats want Congress to refuse certification if President Trump wins. Okay, so the scenario would be he would win, let's say, the Electoral College, maybe, maybe not the popular vote, but 57% of likely Democratic voters have told Rasmussen that Congress should refuse to certify the result of the 2024 election in the event of a Donald Trump victory. Now, isn't that, what are your thoughts on that? I mean,
well, my belief is the vice president has that authority to certify the Electoral College.
Correct.
So I don't believe it is Congress. I believe it's the vice president of the states.
Well, on January 6th, the members of Congress were going to issue motions to halt the certification pending a review of the evidence of.
Well, that needed to happen, and that's what they could—that's what they could have and should have done. The evidence we had at the time was incomplete. On one hand, on the other, it was complete enough to say, "Hey guys, let's wait. Let's review all the evidence before we move forward with this." There was enough evidence to do that, and that's what should have happened. And Mike Pence turned out to be a traitor to his boss, President of the United States, and moved forward with that certification. I don't know what promises or threats were made to that man, but that's what he did, which was absolutely wrong. We probably had the total vote tally in by then, the total votes for the president and for Joe Biden, which exceeded the number of voters.
Yeah,
that by itself was enough to say, "Hey, let's wait. Let's do a thorough investigation of these vote of these elections in these 50 states, especially these swing states." Most of us have seen the stacks of mail-in ballots that were never folded and put in an envelope, but were counted as mail-in ballots anyway.
Right.
That's clear and convincing evidence, which is a term you and I have heard hundreds of times. Clear and convincing evidence that of fraud on the face of it.
Yeah, that's a legal definition. That's a legal phrase. You're correct. But see, now you mentioned Pence. I 100% agree with you on that. But what happened also was when the proceedings were interrupted, when they came back under Nancy Pelosi's emergency rules, which part of that was you didn't have to be in chambers. You could do it remotely via
Zoom. Remotely. Yeah.
That was one. And the other thing is the same rules that applied, you know, prior to them stopping that and then declaring an emergency session didn't apply during the emergency session. So the fix was in, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Based on the rules when they reconvened, which was the rules were different than the first attempt. But all that aside, what do you think? Do you think that's even possible? Where you, I guess it would be possible if people are thinking about it. Yeah, maybe it's possible. Where the left could say, nope, you know what? He's a insurrectionist. He's guilty. Even though maybe by then, hey, maybe he wasn't tried. Do you think that they would do that?
I think, well, there's no saying, well, of course, desperate people do desperate things, Doug. And former years of President Trump would severely hamper, possibly just delay for a generation, the New World Order coming in fully into place. And they can't tolerate that. They can't handle that. This is what we're having right now is the third Barack Obama administration. It's sometimes Joe Biden's called O-Biden for very good reason.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, we do that here. Yeah.
Every president for more than a century, when their term of office was over, they left D.C. and went home, wherever home was. That's not Barack Obama. He bought a very nice, very large mansion right down the street from the White House where he's running things. And most likely it's Valerie Jarrett who's running things day to day, just like she did when Barack Obama was president. Barack Obama played more golf than I believe any president ever. And if he was CEO of General Motors, they would have fired him. You can't play golf that much and run a complex machine like the United States of America. So Valerie Jarrett's been up the street from the White House in that beautiful mansion that Obama bought, running things now for over 3 years. We're into the fourth year. And to get back to your question, desperate people do desperate things. I put nothing past them. It's now being publicly noticed that President Trump requested 10,000 plus National Guardsmen to keep the peace on the 6th of January. That's not the act of a man who wanted an insurrection. That's the act of a man who wanted to keep the peace, and that was denied. Now, once again, clear and convincing evidence that President Trump did not want an insurrection. He wanted peace. He wanted the rule of law, and that's why he requested 10,000 plus National Guardsmen to be on duty that day to keep the peace. Nothing could be more clear to me, Doug. How about you?
I'm glad you mentioned that because that came out, obviously. that he requested 10,000 troops 2 days before. It was on January 4th, I believe. And it was declined by Muriel Bowser, the mayor of D.C. Nancy Pelosi also declined that, as well as, I believe, Sund, the chief of the Capitol Police, but don't quote me on that. So, I mean, yeah, but this story is just making its way through. And that was also pushed down the memory hole by the unselect January 6th committee, which I find was very interesting.
By design. They obfuscated. Yeah. Yeah. Now, the commander of the Capitol Police was kept in the dark. He was not given the intelligence advising what would be happening on January 6th. He was kept out of the loop. That was by design also.
Man, I'll tell you what. Again, you know, cutesy time is over. To coin Dan Bongino's phrase, I believe that we have to really become as vocal as we can, as insistent as we can for justice, and really fight against the weaponized justice system. Because, by the way, John, they're still looking for another couple thousand people to put in jail over January 6th by 2025. And that includes this platform.
Go ahead. Here's one of the dangers of that, Doug. It's well known, especially in a patriot community, that if you're arrested for peacefully walking through a Capitol door that was held open by a Capitol police officer, by the way, that you will be arrested, you'll be charged, you will not be given the opportunity to post bond as every murderer is. You'll be held in a jail with without being brought before a judge, having the charges read to you, and given the ability to post bond. You may sit there for a year or more, waiting for the normal things that happen to a man or woman charged with murder. Now, here's the danger of that. If you know that's what will happen, because that's the track record, and you know that FBI may come to your home at 4 a.m. to break down your door with force of arms, you may decide it's better to die fighting these criminals, which if you're going against our normal legal system, as far as I'm concerned, you're a criminal. It may be better to die rather than face incarceration for a year plus with no opportunity to be brought before a judge and given the opportunity to post bond. I think that's, I'm not going to say it's inevitable, but I'd say it's highly likely, Doug, that men or women could both make that decision. I'm not going to be arrested and spend a year in solitary confinement before even brought before a judge with no chance to post bond. I'll die first. And I think there's a high likelihood that could happen, Doug, with these several thousand men and women they intend to arrest.
Well, and two, the refusal to change the venue. I heard numbers, and if I'm not mistaken, I'm very close if I'm not exact, roughly 100,000 people, residents of D.C., voted for Biden or are Democrats. I think 967 votes in D.C. were for President Trump in the 2020 election. That's the jury pool, you know. So what are the chances you're going to get a fair trial in that venue?
Well, almost non-existent.
Exactly.
There's a term called inside the beltway. Pretty much 100% of people's jobs inside the beltway are connected somehow, some way, to the federal government. There's no factories inside the beltway. There's no wealth comes from mines, factories, and farms. There's no mines, factories, or farms inside the Beltway. It's all government-related. Even your more pedestrian things like automobile mechanics, plumbers, electricians, they all work for doing work for people that work for the federal government in some ways or manner. It's all connected, and everybody knows it. It's no secret that the federal government in the United States inside the Beltway is the source of almost all jobs, almost all income is somehow related to the federal government, somehow, some way. So, of course, they're going to vote that way. Doug, that's a given.
Yeah, it's just, to me, none of this is proper. And you know, how do you fight against that? How do you, in the legal sense, to be, you know, legal, how do you fight against
it? Well, it has to be changed. In this case, there has to be a change of venue.
Exactly. But if
the jury pool is biased. There's no getting around that.
And even if it's not, even if they moved it to somewhere else, I mean, it's definitely, one can argue.
You know, if I was going to sue the Green Bay Packers, I would not have that in their home city of Green Bay, Wisconsin. There's no way. They every seat in the stadium is sold out before the season ever starts.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to sue the Green Bay Packers and have a neutral jury pool. That's not going to happen. And I think that's a good analogy, Doug.
Yeah, exactly. Folks, you're being treated to John Moore, thelibertyman.com. His link to his website will be at HagmanPI.com or is at HagmanPI.com in the program description box. I'm telling you, his news page, make sure you visit his news page and also support the people who support his program. But I would definitely listen to him 5 days a week. That's Monday through Friday. And he's got a great show and great guests. So John, what else is on your mind, sir?
Well, how about the worst crime in human history?
Yes. We can't forget about that. Go ahead.
Well, that would be the consequences of the COVID-19 vaccination clot shot. The government of the state of Florida, the Surgeon General of Florida, is attempting to make these vaccines illegal to be distributed in the state of Florida. It's about 3 years late, as far as I'm concerned, but at least they're doing it. There's still time to save some lives.
Right.
Now, Doug, I believe it's on my website. I believe the seventh day of March, it may have been a different month, but I can go to my website and get that date real quick for us. But it was March, and here we go, of, and I scroll down here a little bit, May the 7th of 2020. I was interviewing Dr. Lynn Horowitz on my show live on air, and I made two statements. First of all, you cannot develop a safe and effective vaccine in 9 months or less. It can't be done. A true statement, and Dr. Horowitz supported that. My second statement, I had no evidence at the time. I've since acquired evidence that the vaccines were already in refrigerators waiting to be distributed, and that was on May the 7th, 2020. It turns out, and I've had information from private sources inside the vaccine industry, that they worked on these vaccines for 6 years before they were released, not nine months. We hear about these vaccines being experimental. They weren't experimental, Doug. And I have several articles and videos by Dr. Michael Yaden, former vice president at Pfizer, former director of medical research at Pfizer. What is there, maybe 10 people on the plant that's got those kind of credentials?
Oh, yeah.
He says these vaccines are intended to kill and hurt people. They're not side effects. They're the direct intended effects to kill and hurt people. We're now looking at a 40% increase in the United States, 40% increase in all-cause mortality, mostly concentrated in men and women between 20 and 50 years old when they should be in a prime of life. Doug, it's you know, every, you mentioned my guest. Every Friday, I have a scientist on with me, the third hour, Marie Lester, the elected coroner of Texas County, Missouri. she's publishing a book coming out in the next few weeks concerning this matter. And she's saying in her own county, Texas County, Missouri, by the way, is the largest county in the state of Missouri as far as square miles, and almost doubling of people dying this year as opposed to previous years, with a dramatic rise in cancer deaths. We're seeing something called turbo cancer, where people go from normal, healthy people to a stage 4 cancer diagnosis in 90 days.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. It's absolutely insane. The people who were in remission for 4 and 5 years suddenly having stage 4 cancer within a very short period of time. Very bizarre, unusual cancers happening that we rarely see happening as well. You know, all a consequence, of course, of the COVID-19 vaccination clot shots. She, not only Marie Lasser, but others, Mrs. Kingston, for example, are saying that this year, 2024, will be the beginning of the big die-off of people who got the COVID vaccination clot shots. 2024, 2025 is when we will see the mass die-offs of people who got these vaccines. Worst crime in human history, Doc.
No, it absolutely. But just looking at the numbers, okay, not including necessarily the boosters, the numbers seem to match what the Deagle report had reported for the population of the U.S. in 2025.
Well, they do. And we wanted for years, what would cause that kind of die-off? Right. And, you know, these vaccines are certainly fit that paradigm very nicely. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know, the Deagle Corporation is a company that does studies for governments and the Fortune 500 companies to find out whatever these governments and Fortune 500 companies want. It's a think tank, for lack of another term.
Right.
And the Deagle report was published publicly in, 8, 10 years ago? Quite a while ago.
It was a while ago, yeah.
And we've wondered for years, how could this happen? The Georgia Guidestones were erected more than 20 years ago, and everybody wondered, how could this happen? A worldwide population of 500 million. Now we're getting some answers as to how that can happen, aren't we, Doug?
Yes. And do you believe, speaking about this very same topic or related to it, do you believe we're going to see something else come out? Are they going to, prior to this next election, are we going to see something else being rolled out beyond the injections? Is that necessary?
Well, they had quite a bit of success the first time. They have a bag of tricks. This is one of the tricks in that bag. And I think it's highly likely that they'll do it again with another pandemic, that they'll, you know, this thing that happened in 2020 killed 0.3% of the people that got it. And they made it look like the bubonic plague and the Spanish flu mixed together to have this massive die-off, which it wasn't that at all. Right. So the mainstream media can make it look like whatever they choose to make it. There's talk about disease X, there's talk about Ebola, they talk about Marburg. It's all on the table, Doug. And, you know, Ebola is real. And it's scary. And movies make it look scarier than what it is. Marburg is a biological weapon. And Ebola probably is also. But Marburg is a biological weapon made in the laboratory. So with the success they had, they needed an excuse, a pretext for the mail-in ballots. And I can't think of other than extreme violence, I can't think of a better excuse than another pandemic of some sort, Doug.
Mm. Yeah, indeed. Are we going to see any justice from this? Because more and more is coming out now where people like yourself, people like your guests, especially the scientists, the coroners, the doctors, who are saying, wait a second, there's something wrong here. Are we going to see any justice about them, first of all, breaking the gain of function moratorium?
Okay, justice will be at the state level. I'm not sure President Trump can clean out the Justice Department sufficiently to move forward at the federal level. He'll make diligent attempts, but at the state level, especially the blue states like my state, Missouri, like Florida, Texas, I see hope for justice at the state level. I see none at the moment at the federal level, and none whatsoever at the international level. The International Court and Hague, I don't expect to see them do anything. But I do see hope at the state level, Doug.
Okay. Well, that's fair. And I can relate to that. What are your thoughts? I just saw a Truth Social post by President Trump about he was again bragging about the rolling out of the jabs and about.
I know, and we talked about. Well, I didn't mention this, but I was invited by Clay Clark to meet General Flynn, which I did this past Saturday, 2 days ago, and. There was at this conference, which was all talk show hosts and podcasters.
Yeah, I couldn't make that, by the way. I had the same invitation, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it was a great event, and I wish you could have been
was
there,
that
Doug.
In Tulsa?
To Tulsa, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Which is right down the highway. I get on 44 near my home and drive right there. But anyway, there was a discussion, but there's several people there who were on a first name basis with President Trump. And, what I heard, the conclusion of what I heard is President Trump is just being President Trump. And I've worked with men like this. You probably have also, where their style of leadership is they can never admit that they were wrong. They simply can't.
Yeah.
And that's an unfortunate personality trait that is not just President Trump, but other men and women and maybe running a shoe store or running a country. That's simply who they are, unfortunately. And in fact, in today's headlines on the Liberty Daily news site, Alex Jones is saying to President Trump, back off.
I saw that.
There's probably numerous people who have access to President Trump telling him the same thing. Now, when he announced he was running for president, 15 months ago, I was hoping he'd come clean.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He didn't. Whatever happened, I was misled. I was threatened. I was fooled. I really believed the lies, whatever it was. But he hasn't. He's sticking to it, and that's very unfortunate, Doug.
Okay, so when you met with General Flynn this
I
past
did.
Weekend, okay.
Yes.
Takeaways from that beyond the...
My immediate impression is very intelligent, very intense. And here's how I introduced myself to General Flynn. I said, General Flynn, my name is John Moore. I was an intelligence analyst in Vietnam before, during, and after the Tet Offensive. I spent most of my life as a homicide detective. And it went from there. So.
Yeah. Oh, man. I would have loved to listen to that. Been there. Wow. Okay.
He's going to be on my show, by the way. And I made the connection. I was hoping to make the connection. He's probably, we're shooting to have him on with myself and Sam Andrews. To debrief him and interview him on a Monday morning, hopefully in the near future. General Flynn is on a nationwide tour to promote his movie. I'll be talking about that soon when I get more details.
Okay.
And his book, How to Defend Yourself from 5G. So the movie is going to be a very important matter for General Flynn and for the public and the entire public of the United States. And I'm looking forward to seeing it and promoting it both.
Well, that sounds great. And folks, that's why you need to tune in to the Liberty Man, his radio show. Go to thelibertyman.com. And of course, you can get a show right there and dig down for the archives. But hey, John Moore, he's got his finger in the pulse of many people who are movers and shakers. By the way, who do you think, Vice President slot for President Trump, what are your thoughts on that? Who might it be?
Well, the governor, Kristi Noem, I think it would be a good choice. There's some people I don't want to see leave office. Senator Rand Paul, for example, I think he's better off staying where he is. He'd make a great vice president, but he can get a lot more done where he is. There's a bad blood between the governor of Florida DeSantis said, once again, I think DeSantis can do more good staying in Florida where he is. The woman who ran for Senate in Arizona, the news reporter, Carrie Lake, she'd make a great vice president. I would love to see her as vice president.
Well, what about Vivek Ramaswamy?
Well, he has to be qualified to be president before he can be vice president. His parents were not U.S. citizens when he was born.
He's not a natural born citizen.
He's not a natural born citizen.
Right.
By definition.
That's correct.
There's a lot of questions about his political and business connections.
Yep.
The 900-pound gorilla in the middle of the living room is he's not a natural-born citizen, and that's just like Barack Obama. That's not being addressed, and it needs to be addressed.
100% behind you on that. 100% indeed. All right, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Okay, so we've got about 10 minutes left of the program. Whatever's on your heart, my friend.
Well, we talk about. Well, two things on my show a lot. One is personal family protection. The other is what can we do locally? And here's what you can do locally. First of all, unacceptable percentage of conservative Christian patriots are either not registered to vote, or if they are, don't bother to go to the polls and vote, which is 20 or 25% of these men and women. We need to create enough enthusiasm that these conservative Christian patriots are both registered to vote and actually show up at the polls the first Tuesday in November. If we can do that, if we can motivate these men and women to show up and vote, they may say, oh, my vote doesn't count. Oh, it doesn't matter. Well, in these local elections, it matters a lot. We had a conservative Christian patriot woman here in my county run for judge. And she lost by 12 votes. It turns out her own extended family, the siblings, brother-in-laws, sister-in-laws, nieces, nephews who were old enough to vote, and that was more than 12 votes, didn't show up to vote for her. And she lost by a number of votes that her own family could have made up for. It's just one of them. I've seen many local elections decided by 2 or 3 or 8 or 10 votes. At the local level, These votes mean an awful lot, Doug.
And they do. And one thing I would also recommend, if you don't mind me just interjecting
please.
This, if you are in a location where they have these drop boxes, I know that we are putting together a team or have almost, it's almost complete, a team to conduct 24/7 video and in-person surveillance of these drop boxes in a county in Pennsylvania. That's all I'm going to say, because I don't want to tip my hand on what's going on. But I think we need to really be proactive in whatever we can do.
Well, I've done thousands of hours of covert surveillance, like you have. But I think it's better to make it a tailgate party with great food and coffee and music and so forth, and make it a tailgate party and videotape what's going on at the drop boxes. If it has to be covert, then hey, make it covert. With the modern technology that's video, that's not hard to do at all.
You and I go back to the days of they didn't have the technology that they do today, I'll tell you, and it was difficult to be.
Well, I span both here. We started out with 8mm cameras,
yep,
movie cameras,
yep,
and in the mid-80s when video started coming into and it was moving so fast in the mid-80s, it was breathtaking, the how small the cameras became, how powerful they became. It was an amazing time for video surveillance, to say the least.
Yeah, exactly.
An exciting time, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, from 8mm to VHS to VHS-C to the smaller cameras. Or 16mm to 8 to, yeah, I got all that. It was just, wow, yeah, it was crazy. But all right. Yeah, we'll continue, my friend.
If you want to and you feel like you should run for county commission, city council, library boards, school boards, if you don't have the time and energy to do that, then support conservative Christian candidates that are running for those offices. Candidates, no matter if they're president or school board, they need two things. They need money and volunteer help. If you contribute one or the other or both, that will help that candidate secure that post on a library board, a school board, a city council. Well, we conservative Christians, patriots, have been asleep at the wheel for decades, Doug, while our opposition, the socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims, have been taking over these positions. And that needs to change. You know, we need to focus on these local elections. These senators and congressmen, they start out as state reps and state senators, and frequently as a city councilman or some other position before they become a state rep or state senator. So these local elections do matter. That's the future of our country. And whatever it takes to win these local elections, be active at the county level. I'm the elected committeeman for my township. Republican township, commitment from Osage Township, and we help conservative Christians, patriots get elected in my county. There's 3,300 plus county in the United States, Doug. Many of these committee women and committee men posts go empty because nobody even bothers to register for those positions. And all the power at the national level comes from the county level. That's where it all begins. And don't ignore these county-level positions. Many people don't even know that these county positions even exist, Doug.
Yeah,
committee men and committee. They don't.
Yeah.
And I'll give you how much time we got, 2 or 3 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah, about that.
Friend of mine, Air Force veteran, a four-year degree from a brick-and-mortar college, running a business with 6 to 8 employees, wrote a book on his chosen career. Great guy, family man. Doug, he did not know that there's a difference between a U.S. senator and a state senator. This is not some high school dropout. This is a successful businessman with a college degree. He did not know there's a difference between a state senator and a United States senator. That's what we're up against, Doug, as far as the level of ignorance among the electorate.
Man. Yeah, a little bit light there under government classes, my friend. Not you, him, but the final point. I mean, don't think that other people know what you know, because oftentimes they don't. So share your knowledge and really. Do you think in the closing moments here? Do you see if things don't go the way of the left, do you see violence like we saw in the summer of love, the summer of 2020, breaking out to the extent that perhaps, just perhaps, we might be fighting one another, kind of getting softened up for maybe something external to happen?
I certainly see another George Floyd scenario this coming summer. George Floyd killed himself with a drug overdose, of course.
Yes.
I think the more higher percentage chance of violence would be between the first Tuesday of November and the inauguration. I think that's the highest percentage level of violence nationwide to prevent the new president from being inaugurated.
And I think that would go either way, too. Although I would put my money more on if President Trump did win the election, then
it'll appear to be spontaneous, but it'll be George Soros funded.
Yep,
he will He will recruit, train, and equip and pay for the rioters. It won't be spontaneous at all, Doug.
No, and hey, the bricks are already being shipped out. I can see that.
Absolutely.
John Moore, the Liberty Man. John, I'm going to thank you so much for your
You're welcome. Spending good to see you. Today.
It's good to see you as well. And folks, make sure you tune in to his radio program, thelibertyman.com. That's his web address. It'll be on the program description page. John, thank you so very much, my friend.
Thank you. Good to talk to you, Doug.
God bless. Have a good day.